Hey, this is Scott Galloway, author, professor, entrepreneur, and most importantly, host of the Prop G podcast. We got a special series running on right now called The Future of Work, where I answer all your questions on, surprise, the future of work. Questions including, what are we missing when we work remotely? Or how do we handle work-life balance when a major opportunity comes knocking? From the provocative to the technical, we're offering insights you won't want to miss. So tune in to The Future of Work, a Prop G Pod special sponsored by Canva. You can find it on the Prop G Pod wherever you get your podcasts.
What's up, Bills Mafia? I'm Fernando Shimoji. That's your leading the charge. And today I have Randy Hartman with me again. Always a pleasure, Randy. Welcome. Welcome, Bills Mafia. Thank you so much for joining us here at Buffalo Run. Randy, the house is yours always, man. Thank you so much for joining me today.
Thank you. Appreciate you having me on again.
Awesome. I've been in touch with Randy through this week, and today we're going to do the Lofton exercise. It was actually one of my first episodes here at Buffalo Rumblings was about this Lofton exercise. And I know you that haven't ever heard about it to know a little bit about it shortly. But it's something that I've done since my Cover One days, writing articles for Cover One. It's something that Eric Turner brought me back in the day as an idea for an article, right? And that's an evaluation, a simple evaluation process that, why is it named Lofton exercise after all? It's obviously named after former Bills and Packers Hall of Fame wide receiver James Lofton. And when he was part of Marty Schottenheimer's coaching staff with the San Diego Chargers back in the day, on an interview, he shared this information with us about the process that Marty Schottenheimer asked his coaching staff to do to evaluate his rosters, his teams, right? And it was pretty easy. Schottenheimer asked his coaching staff to separate their players, to grade them, or to separate them by tiers. And the tiers were: the first one, can this player win games for you? The second one, you can win with those players, right? And the third one, you need better. Those three tiers, we're gonna check the Bills roster and see where we can rank those players and which tiers we have those players. So I did it in one of my first episodes ever here at Buffalo Rumblings before last season's or this season's free agency, right? So I had Edmonds in the team. I had some question marks if Oliver would be on the team. But it will be nice to see how the roster right now compares to the roster before that free agency back in the day. So I'm excited to share those results with you and to actually do the exercise live here with Randy helping me out and discussing. I didn't prepare my list beforehand, so I'm anxious to go through this list and to evaluate those guys and to see Randy's opinion and also your opinion, Bills Mafia. So feel free to comment in the chat if you agree, disagree. Also, if you're watching on another day and not live with us, feel free to let us know in the comment section your opinion about the list and where do you agree, where do you disagree. So hit that like button, subscribe to Buffalo Rumblings channel, and let's get it going, Randy. So I will share an image here with All Mafia, and I'm going to start with the Bills defense. So I have a courtesy of our lads, okay, this depth chart, and the Bills defense depth chart. In yellow, we have the names that are free agents, right, potential free agents. We never know with what's going to happen before free agency actually starts. And even other names here can become free agents via cuts, right? So we have here the depth chart up to date already with, for example, Matt Milano back in the starting lineup. So we have the main Bills players in this roster and in this defense here on the screen. And I would like to start evaluating this defensive line, Randy, because I feel this defensive line has let the team down in the last two playoff appearances, right? I think there was a huge opportunity to take advantage of that Bengals offensive line. They were banged up, right, a season ago, and they couldn't. And now, again, they were no factors against the Chiefs in this elimination game. So let's start from here, and please get it rolling. Randy, feel free to start, please.
Sure. I mean, I think if you're talking about the difference between guys that can lead you to a win versus guys that can be, you know, win with, I think the defensive line is a perfect example. There's nobody currently on our defensive line that will win games for you, and that shows up in the playoffs. Ed's a good player. I think he's an ascending player. He definitely earned his contract extension this year, but when it mattered the most, he was gone. And not only was he gone, but he was singled up the entire game, and that shows up. I mean, that's not just conjecture. That's verifiable. So one-on-one against KC, he didn't make a difference. Daquan Jones, as much as everybody likes him, and he's old, he didn't make a difference. So Leonard Floyd, been a great signing, didn't make much of a difference either. So the defensive line is a case of – it's kind of a – I'm not going to say it's – worst case scenario, but in terms of what the Bills have committed to it, it's about as bad as it can get, because they've committed a bunch of resources, time, money, and draft picks to it. And when it matters most, their return on investment is nothing. So we have good players. They haven't come through when we needed them. And so they are all guys that you can win with, but not because of, to me. I think we're still searching what they wanted Von Miller to be, which he was for eight games. And since then, obviously, we know what happened. But we're still searching for that guy. And whether they find him this year or not is to be determined.
Yeah, man. I remember from the exercise that I mentioned from before last season's free agency, right? Before the free agency. And I remember I had Vaughn and Daquan Jones as guys that could win games for you. And in fact, Daquan maybe was this guy before the injury, right? In the first few weeks of the season. Sure. But unfortunately, Vaughn hasn't been this guy this year. And it's a huge cash question mark if he can get back to this level. Actually, I'd be happy to see him getting back to can win with level, you know, because right now, having Vaughn as a starter in the majority of the snaps, I'd be more inclined to rank him in you need better than that, right? If he's going to be your starter, one of your top two edge rushers, you got to get more from him than what the Bills have gotten recently. So,
oh yeah, I mean, absolutely. Right? I think Von Miller went from a guy that can win a game for you to a need better coming off that injury. And again, I understand timetables and return to full strength and all that. I get that. I'm not discounting the fact the guy is coming back from an injury. Fact of the matter is, when you're looking at return on investment, you give the guy $100+ million, you need the performance out of it. And right now, you've got eight good games. And then the rest, and it's not there. I get that there are extenuating circumstances, but again, when the rubber meets the road, it just hasn't been worth it so far.
Totally agree, man. And with all those free agents and all those guys leaving the team, probably, right? Because it's not going to be easy to retain most of them. That's the obviously, without a lot of cap space, but via draft even, it's probably an opportunity to rebuild this unit, right? You have Ed Oliver, and obviously, he looked like a guy who could win games for you during all season. But just like you said, during the playoffs, he showed that he still can't be trusted as a guy like that, because Tony totally dominated him, right? So
well, I think I think that what we really need, and I'm glad you mentioned free agency and the cap situation and everything, because I know Greg Thompson over at Cover One did a show the other day about where we sit in terms of cap space and all that. And the long and short of it is that there are available avenues to create cap space and to be able to make some moves, not big moves. And I think that's important to understand, because the simulation that I was experimenting with at Over the Cap, which is a great resource if you want to check that out, basically led me to find that by pulling the right levers and by doing a couple timely extensions, we could bring back AJ Epenesa and Leonard Floyd, okay, to not high-end, not top-end deals, but not bottom-basement deals, and would leave us some breathing room to be able to add here and there and, get the Puna Fords and guys like that later on at the end of camp to be able to supplement your roster. But there's not much beyond that, and you really have to make the decision of which direction you want to go. Like, if they come out, I'll give you an example. If they come out at the beginning of free agency and they sign, like, let's say Michael Pittman, for example, to be that wide receiver two, that basically means that Floyd, Epenesa, probably DaQuan Jones are all out the door. So it's a 3-for-1 swing, essentially. You either get one high-priced guy and then kind of let everybody else drift away, or you can sign two or three moderately priced guys and sacrifice the big money splash. I think I know which way Bean is going to go, but again, it's a crazy time of year. Stuff happens. You never know.
Yeah, they are absolutely also learning year by year, right? Trying to get better, and maybe we can, for example, check what Bean did the last offseason and how attacking the wide receiver position. He tried Hardy, he tried Sherfield, he tried several routes, and maybe, who knows, he just looked at that and said, now I'm going to try a guy who I really can trust and then draft later for depth, right? So who knows what's the direction they're gonna go in this defensive line. But looking at the names we have now, and if we bring back, for example, Floyd or DaQuan Jones or even Epenesa, who's a guy who I feel like people loves him or likes him more than I do. I don't know, man. I just couldn't see him on the field against the Chiefs. And yes, he's trending up. He's developing still in the right direction, but I feel like my expectation with him since he was made a second round pick and how he's developed so far, I feel like kind of let down. So I'd rather go a different route and see Bean trying to identify sneak good signings, other names, try something different. Those guys had plenty of opportunities already. And when we needed them the most, I felt like they didn't get the job done. So I'd move on to linebackers with the defensive line with zero guys that can win games for you. Three guys that you can win with, and those guys would be Rousseau, Oliver, and DaQuan Jones. And then having Von Miller as a guy who gotta be better. You need better than that. And not essentially a better player than Von Miller, but you need Von Miller playing better than that, right? So he might be able to offer that next season to be at least in the group that you can win with. No doubt that's a group that could use an early draft pick that could come in and impact quickly, right? Be a difference maker. Not easy to find, right? But who knows, a defensive tackle or even as a pass rusher again. So how do you feel about the Bills maybe trying to address it via draft again after spending so many resources already about in Rousseau, Epenesa, Boogie Basham, who isn't even there anymore, Ed Oliver, right?
Well, part of the reason why I am in favor of pulling the levers to be able to re-sign Leonard Floyd and AJ Epenesa is because I think that they're good rotational pieces in this defense and they can be functional. What I think is that we would be better served to try and beef up that interior with a higher end pick, not a first round pick, because I'm all on the wide receiver in the first round train. But I mean, I think if you can come in the second or third and get a nice explosive interior piece to complement what Ed does, and what, you know, if you bring in Daquan Jones, if, you know, somebody to spell him and kind of keep that fresh rotation going, that's the way that I would go about it, personally. I think that's probably the smartest way to try and keep things going and not completely tear it down.
Yeah, and despite the recent development, I think there is still a little bit of hope that Rousseau can become a guy that can win games for you, or even Oliver can take a next step and become a guy that can win games for you. And obviously, as much or if you add more players that you can win with around them, it allows them maybe to take this next step. So those are guys that you might be able to see taking this next step next season, right? Okay, let's move on to linebacker position, a group that people weren't very confident last year, right? But now we have, assuming Milano can get back healthy and at the same level as we are used to watching him play. And we have Matt Milano, Terrell Bernard, right? We know that the Bills play with two linebackers, right? We don't use the third linebacker, is essentially Teron Johnson. So with Terrell Bernard and Matt Milano, I really feel like we really have two guys that can win games for us here. Bare minimum, as we wait for Milano to get back at full health, a guy you can win with. But I feel like those two, when healthy, and in this, with the way that McDermott wanna use his defense, I feel like they can be special together there.
Hey, this is Scott Galloway, author, professor, entrepreneur, and most importantly, host of the Prop G podcast. We got a special series running on right now called The Future of Work, where I answer all your questions on, surprise, the future of work. Questions including, what are we missing when we work remotely? Or how do we handle work-life balance when a major opportunity comes knocking? From the provocative to the technical, we're offering insights you won't want to miss. So tune in to The Future of Work, a Prop G Pod special sponsored by Canva. You can find it on the Prop G Pod wherever you get your podcasts.
Yeah, I mean, I think the linebacker duo that we have are guys that can definitely win for you when healthy. They've shown it. Milano, you know, definitely this year and last year and his whole career leading up to this point, the guy can make big plays when it matters. And Bernard this year was a revelation that, you know, I think you were probably one of the few people that saw that coming. I certainly wasn't, and I can admit that. I have before. I think in terms of linebackers moving forward, I would like, and this is not a knock on Teron Johnson at all, but they have got to find a way to be able to play three linebacker sets effectively and not lose in terms of versus a team like the Chiefs that can, you know, that can kind of pick them apart across the middle like they did, you know, with Klein out there. So for me, I think the development of Dorian Williams into that possible third linebacker role is going to be really important this year, not just as a role player backup, but if they want to roll out a pure 43 three linebacker set, being able to have Dorian Williams out there who can run and hit and add some coverage to his game to complement what Bernard and Milano do, that would be something that would be really advantageous for us, I think, especially come playoff time, if everyone's healthy. So that's what I'll be looking for this summer and also in camp, you know, next or later on this year, is where that goes. But I don't think we need to really add anything. I think Dodson would be nice to bring back on a smaller deal. He may get, you know, some mid-level contract somewhere else, but, you know, you have – the two main guys, you have Dorian Williams, you have Baylen Specter. Tyler Matakiewicz probably gone. That's probably going to be the Spectre role going forward. And if you can bring back Dodson, that'd be great. So that would be my linebacker group. Ideally, I don't think we need to add any more.
Yeah, I agree, man. I don't think we got to add anything there. I feel like it's time to move on from Tyler Matkevich. The Bills can't still spend money on him. We saw that the special teams wasn't really dominant, wasn't a special unit, and so it's hard to justify spending more money on Matkevich. And with two observations about what you said, with Dodson, I have a major red flag on Dodson because, man, McDermott preferring to go, or rather going with Klein as middle linebacker for that game instead of having Dodson there. Dodson essentially had all of season as a middle linebacker one, had the preseason as a middle linebacker one. Obviously, he wasn't doing it well, and he lost the job to a guy who essentially didn't play in the preseason, despite I really believing that it was Bernard's job to lose all along, right? But the fact that he went Klein and he took a long time to move on from Klein. He played Klein at middle linebacker essentially all game long, but for three quarters we could see Klein on the field all the time and not using Dodson. Yeah, Dodson was a little bit banged up, but still, it's a red flag in my opinion if Dodson can't really be that middle linebacker when needed, at least, right? And we know that Terrell Bernard, one of the things that worries me about Terrell Bernard is obviously he's in the biggest guy and he can be banged up quite often during his career with the way he plays, with the way he take on blocks and how aggressive he is. He can miss some games here and there, just like Milano also. So I'm a little bit worried about Dodson in that sense. But on the other hand, just like you said, Dorian Williams' development is really important, and it's really important to Dorian to be able to fill in, not just on Milano's place when the opportunity arises, but also on Bernard's place when needed, right? He has the athleticism, he has long arms, he kind of feels like a mini Edmonds out there, you know? And yeah, man, I hope he can develop, and I feel like he can be a decent third linebacker already next season, just assuming from the jump that Bernard has done from year one to year two. I want to believe Dorian can have a good jump in terms of knowing the defense, knowing where to be. That's where he struggled the most, I believe, this rookie season. But I haven't seen anything from McDermott that would make me confident that he's ready to use three linebackers, you know. He refused to do so against the Patriots, that game that the Patriots run the ball all game long. And I don't know. I really believe he refuses to go that route no matter what, you know. And you can just find that it's bad to take Taron Johnson out of the field. He's right now our only all-pro player on the defense this year, right? But with Hyde probably retiring or moving on, certainly moving on, how do you see as a possibility maybe McDermott having some packages where he can have three linebackers and maybe even have Taron Johnson as one of the safeties in those situations?
I mean, I don't know about having him play a safety role, but I think it's absolutely critical that we have to find viable three linebacker packages. I mean, look, against the best teams, against the Kansas Cities of the world, they're going to exploit those matchups. You got AJ Klein out there, you know, due to injury, they exploited it. You don't take Taron Johnson off the field, you got that way undersized third linebacker out there. They're going to create mismatch, and that's what they do. That's what they did. That's what they continue to do. That's why we can't get by – one of the reasons why we can't get by the Kansas Cities of the world, you know. It's because we have some personnel deficiencies, and we also have the head coach who is just not being flexible enough to be able to work around it. You know, it's a – punch and counterpunch situation. And for 3 years, we've been getting punched and punched and punched, and we're not counterpunching correctly. And that's got to change. If we ever want to get over this hump, we've got to figure out something different. And if that means going against your philosophical tendencies to try and create something new, then that's what you have to do. If you're Sean McDermott, if you're this defensive coaching staff, you have to get in the lab and figure out what can we do to not have this happen again. Because essentially, you know, in two games against the Chiefs in the playoffs, we've been in a position to walk off the field with a lead, and it goes away. The first time they actually did walk off the field with a lead and the defense surrendered, we know what happened. This time, you know, there's a chance for a game-tying field goal, which I don't even want to get into it, but you have a chance to tie the game with under 2 minutes left or win it on that drive, and it didn't happen. But there was no confidence in that defense, even had they scored a touchdown or a field goal, that the defense was going to be able to hold off Kansas City with under 2 minutes left. There's none, because they were just going to exploit the matchups, drive down the field, and win the game. For a defensive head coach who prides himself on being able to close out games with defense, it's a big problem, and it's going to stop us from ever getting anywhere.
Yeah, man, I definitely agree. I feel like McDermott, as a defensive specialist, he got to have answers for all possible adjustments that he's going to, just like you said, maybe he doesn't see all those adjustments during regular season, but when you face Andy Reid in the playoffs, when you face even McDaniels in the playoff, or when you face all of those offensive mind coaches that prepares all week long for one game against you, elimination game, they certainly gonna explore all the alternatives, all the paths so they can beat you. And if you are only one dimensional on defense with what you do, and you refuse to move on from that, or you don't have answers, like just like they didn't have any answers for, okay, our plan is starting client, middle linebacker, and we don't have answers for if they start to exploit them, it's really bad. It's his job to find some alternatives, and I hope he can start working, because now it really seems that now he doesn't have an excuse, that he doesn't have the material, the players to do so. Dorian Williams developing in his second season. Man, you have your hand-picked guys in Milano, Bernard, and Dorian Williams to be your top three linebackers and to be an advantage for you and a set for your defense, right? So I hope it goes this way. Moving on from linebackers, so two guys that can win games for you. The third one, in Dorian, I'm talking potential, but I'd be inclined to put him in you can win with, especially as a third guy. I feel like you can win with Dorian as your third linebacker. Before moving on to the defensive back, Josh Lane sent a question here about any thoughts on possibility of getting players like Clowney, Higgins, Mike Evans, or Pittman Jr. And I know it's a long shot, but Khalil Mack possible trade. It's a subject that even Randy mentioned the great job that Greg Thompson did with the cap space, right? And in his show this week. And I feel like if the Bills want to add one of those guys, it will be only this guy in the free agency. And then you got to fill the rest of the roster with minimum guys and draft picks, right, Randy?
My feeling on these guys specifically, and I'll go through them real quick one by one. Mm-hmm. I think Clowney is potential, but he is not a pass rusher in the sense that he's going to generate a bunch of sacks. I think if you're looking for somebody that's going to be getting sacks, you're better off re-signing Leonard Floyd, period. Higgins is going to be at the top end. That's the guy that if you want to go get him, you go get him, but you're going to get nothing else in free agency. So, yep. And that's going to hamstring your possibilities in terms of getting depth pieces and fill-in pieces at the end of camp to be able to fill out your roster. Michael Pittman is along those same lines, not quite as much, but it's going to hinder, you know, any other major signings. And then Mike Evans, and I would love to get Mike Evans if it was the guy that, you know, I wanted to draft when we took Sammy Watkins. I don't know if that's who you're getting. So I would say of all those, I'd probably pass on all of them. Honestly, if we can't re-sign Floyd, maybe take a gander at Clowney for, you know, bet minimum or close to it, something like that. Khalil Mack, again, you're in that Von Miller territory where you've got a lot of resources and money tied up into that position. And if you make a trade for that, what are you giving away? And then, you know, what does his contract look like? I haven't even looked at it, so I'm not totally sure. I think it's a lot to ask. And I think there are other ways to spend the money that we could have, not even that we have right now, because we don't actually have it yet. So I would pass on those guys.
Yeah, I feel it ain't happening as well. I'd love Higgins. My goodness, I'd love Higgins. I think he would be an awesome target for Josh and for a long time, right? But the finances, they don't work here. And Clowney is a guy that I actually have had on my radar quite often in the last few off seasons, but I already quit on that train. You know, I feel like he isn't the kind of pass rusher that they look for, because they never tried him and he was out there available several times, especially this season. Right. And so Mac, I feel like the contract would be really difficult to take on in this cap situation, but who knows? We'll need to wait and see. So defensive backs, another area where big time turnover probably happening, because it's an end of an era maybe at this group at defensive backs in Micah Hyde starting, maybe probably retiring or moving on. And big question marks about Tre'Davious White. If there is a place where the Bills can save some money, it's cutting Tre'Davious White, right? And a lot of question marks about him when he comes back, at what level he'll be able to play, and if he's even going to be better than Rasul Douglas or even than Bamford, or what Bamford offered you and how he's been developing the last few seasons. So big question marks about Tre'Davious White. Randy, looking at this defensive backs group, please let me know your opinion.
I would love it if Trey could come back and transition to free safety. I think with the guys that you have right now, Douglas should be the unquestioned CB1 coming into camp. And then Bamford right behind him at two. He's earned it. I would love to say that Elam has earned that CB2 spot, and you really have two dynamic corners out there, but he hasn't done it yet. Maybe he'll be able to wrestle that job from Bamford. It doesn't look that way. He's gotten beat 2 years in a row. I don't see that changing in year three, but who knows? It could. Either way, he's a solid third cornerback to have. And then you have Trey White coming off his second surgery. So I think in the ideal world, I would like Trey to transition to safety, make up for losing Micah Hyde, who's probably gone, who's almost 100% gone. And then you look into the draft to get some more safety, you know, help and potentially a starter going forward. Because I think Poyer is also on the list of guys that we really, really, really need to replace. Will that happen? I wouldn't hold your breath on Trey being able to make that transition. I think more than likely it's going to end up with him being released. But it'll be a sad day, because he's been such a big part of the team since he got there, and that's McDermott's first round pick. And, you know, he's been a huge part of the franchise.
Get ready for the greatest roast of all time. The Roast of Tom Brady. A Netflix live event happening May 5th. Hosted by Kevin Hart, the seven-time world champion gets his cleats held to the fire by famous friends and frenemies on an unforgettable night where everything is fair game. Tune in on May 5th at 5 p.m. Pacific time for The Roast of Tom Brady, live only on Netflix.
Yeah, man. I also would be sad to see Trey go. I would love to have him moving to safety, He knows the defense. He's been around Hyde and Poyer all along, right? And he knows what McDermott wants from his defensive backs.
I think it's a size and style factor, though. I don't think he's necessarily big enough in a traditional sense to be safety. So he would have to alter his body a little bit to be able to make that transition.
True. And also, if you cut Tre'Davious White, you get some money to sign one of the good safeties in the free agency. So there needs to be you need to evaluate your options, right, and see what's really the best cost-benefit move.
Personally, I would like to go after Israel Mukwamu and with the Cowboys. Just personal preference.
Yes, that's an interesting name. And with Poyer, man, he can't stay on this team without taking a pay cut, at least, right? Because I don't know. Even I think it's the perfect opportunity to with Hyde move on from Poyer as well. You know, I know he made an awesome play against the Chiefs to save that touchdown, but we can't be fooled by one play, and he hasn't been the same Jordan Poyer as we've seen in his prime. I've been telling, especially my audience in Portuguese, the Brazilian audience, I've been telling for a long time now about, look, we will end paying Hyde and Poyer for what they've already done in the past and not for what they're going to do in the future, right? And I feel like this year it happened. They were earning money for what they've already done, not for what they are producing right now. And it's not going to get better, right? So might be the perfect option to move on from both here, right? And especially if you can move Tre'Davious White to safety and make it easier to another safety to come in via draft or via free agency and to play alongside him. But a lot of question marks here. I think what I can really assure, in my opinion, is that I feel like Rasul Douglas, I feel like Christian Benford, those are guys that you can win with, right? And Rasul Douglas might be a guy that can win games for you sometimes with his playmaking ability, right?
Yeah, I have him in my win games for you category.
Yeah, he's a playmaker, definitely a playmaker. I just feel like he isn't consistently a lockdown guy. So he will win games for you with some big plays, but he also will sometimes be burned by some good or great wide receivers. He isn't that lockdown guy. So there is this trade-up. That's why I tend to go more to can win with than win games for you. But he's really close, and he's been, as a Bill, a guy that has won game for us, no doubt. And Benford and Tyrone Johnson, a guy that win games for you, in my opinion, as well. It's not maybe with the big plays like Rasul Douglas, but it's impressive how he can fill in the box and play the run, right? And that's a guy who is an impactful player. And then Benford you can win with, and he's getting better. I feel like Kair Elam, man, I want to go you can win with because of the injury, because of the lack of opportunities. But he has his rough games as well, so it's not like you can't put him in gotta be better. He gotta be better in the sense of being more
consistent,
dependable. Yeah, consistent, right?
Yeah.
But the ability is there, the potential is there. So I feel like you have the depth at the cornerback positions, right? And then Poyer. Man, I really don't know. Maybe you can win with, but he's been moved around. He's played dime linebacker to minimize or to make him being an impactful player. So maybe ideally you have a little bit more athleticism in the back end, right? And I might go with.
And that's why I would look at, you know, in free agency and also in the draft. I mean, you have a coach who kind of specializes in this type of thing, where, you know, he found Jordan Poyer coming off a lacerated kidney off the scrap heap and turned him into an all-pro player, or helped him become an all-pro player. He took an undervalued guy in Micah Hyde in free agency, you know, and he becomes an all-pro type player. So as far as being able to having a coach and the staff that can develop these guys, I think you still have that in place as long as McDermott's here. So if it's me, I'm looking at undervalued free agents and mid-round draft picks and going to town on trying to refine some of those rough edges and turn those guys into quality players. That's where my head is with it. I don't think you need to go round one or two for safety, certainly. And I wouldn't spend a lot of money in free agency. I would go mid-level, mid-low level free agency, and then rely on my coaching staff to be able to, you know, create those diamonds.
Work that magic again, right? Yeah. Yep. So closing the deal, we have, I put Rasuts who can win games for you, right? I really take a lot of consideration into your evaluation. So since mine was really close, I pushed him up to can win games for you. And then we have guys that you can win with in Bamford, in Tyron Johnson also can win games for you, two guys there. And then Bamford you can win with. Poyer I had and can win with. And then gotta be better, Elon and Tre'Davious White. I don't know, man. Total question mark here with coming back from injury. I really don't know about it. Bills Mafia, hit that like button, subscribe to Buffalo Rumblings channel. Help us to keep producing this episode. We'll be available on Apple Podcasts and Spotify as well. Moving on to the offensive side of the ball. We already had questions here in the chat about the offensive side. So, and it's about Stephon Diggs. So let's start about the wide receivers. Diogo asked here, Randy, advancing the topic a little. Can Diggs still be considered can win games for you? That's a nice question because there has been a lot of debate about Stephon Diggs, where is he at right now? And if he still is that guy that we saw even in the first half of the season, a wide receiver one, but that the production has fallen recently after Brady took over and it seemed like he was a little bit banged up. Sometimes he took himself out of games very often. It was a weird second half of the season and obviously the disappointing game against the Chiefs. So looking at Diggs, what's your opinion on our number one wide receiver, Randy?
I think he can still be that guy. I think, you know, the last half of this year, he was a guy that you can win with, but will not win games for you. And I think a big part of that was, you know, that there was just some schematical changes that happened with the offensive coordinator turnover. Also, teams were playing us differently. I think next year, once you get, once you invest a nice pick in a wide receiver to complement what we do, I think you can see that open back up again and see him become that dynamic league-leading playmaker that, you know, he was the first couple of years and what he was on pace to be this year before things kind of got off track. I don't think any of that's really changed. I think it's going to be key that we get him that running mate on the other side. It's going to be important. Just like in Cincinnati, when they got Ja'Marr Chase, all of a sudden T. Higgins became the T. Higgins that everybody wants nowadays. He wasn't that prior to Ja'Marr Chase getting there. He was okay. He was good, but he wasn't that guy. And now all of a sudden he's that guy. And I think in a reverse way almost, because Diggs has been that guy, but I think getting another one that can be more than Gabe Davis is going to really help him. It's going to take some pressure off him. That's my thought on it. I don't think that there's any reason to think that Stephon Diggs can't get back to the form that we all know he can.
Yeah, I feel like people are overreacting to this last game, especially the drop. It was disappointing, no doubt. But even during this bad stretch, right, with Brady, we saw him beating Jalen Ramsey like he was nothing, and Josh missing him deep. And we saw he beating the Patriots defensive back as well for a big play. And it was just about Josh hitting him to have those over 100-yard games and more touchdowns. So the ability is still there. When healthy, he's still physically capable, right? He didn't forget how to play the position. He didn't forget how to run crisp routes. And so I feel like he still can be this guy. But moving to wide receiver two, answering Diogo, and I feel like you agree, Randy, Diggs can still win games for you, and I have him there. But the wide receiver two, you definitely need better than Gabe Davis. I know a lot of people appreciate him. I know his teammates appreciate him a lot. I know he works hard as anybody, and he earned that C on the chest. But you need better. You simply need better from the guy playing opposing to Stephon Diggs. You need a guy who can draw attention. You need a guy that people fear on one-on-one contested catches, deep throws. So Diggs' life can be easier, right? Kincaid is helping in that direction. Shakir has been growing in that direction, and I'm excited to see him next season as the guy, as the slot guy. But you need that number two. So I feel Davis, you gotta get better than that, and the draft is the best route for that, especially in this draft class that seems very rich at the wide receiver position, right?
Yeah, and there's, you know, if you follow me on Twitter, you know there's one guy in particular I got my eye on. Should have come as no surprise, but yeah, I mean, I think adding, you know, in the range of 28, I think there's going to be a couple guys in that, you know, in that range, give or take a couple picks. And we know that Brandon Bean has no qualms about throwing away a fourth rounder to move up a few spots, so that's not a concern. But I think, yeah, a guy, you know, there's been a few names thrown out there, Troy Franklin, Adonai Mitchell, maybe Keon Coleman is some people's cup of tea. But for me, it's my local guy, Xavier Leggett, South Carolina. We'll see what he measures at this coming up week in Mobile. He's listed at 6'3", 227. But the main thing about Leggett that you need to know, whatever he is, 6', 6'1", 6'2", 6'3", doesn't matter. The guy was clocked, and I want to make this clear. This is an in-game clock. This isn't on a track. This isn't a 40-yard dash. This is in-game. This guy was pulling away from DBs and linebackers and safeties and was clocked in-game faster than Tyreek Hill, okay? This is a 227-pound receiver that, as far as foot speed goes, with the ball in his hand, is faster than Tyreek Hill. You tell me that's not something we can't add to this offense to create an extra dimension to be able to open things up for Kincaid, for Diggs, for Shakir, for James Cook, and for Josh Allen running the ball too. It's important that we add that type of dimension. So that's my guy. He's a contested catch monster also. I think it's one of those things to where – and he offers more than what Gabe Davis does.
Yeah, so, man, the size speed combination just gives me some DK Metcalf feelings, you know, about him. Obviously, different players, but it feels like the size speed combination, the ability to go up and get it, right? So the Bills passed on DK Onse. I hope if he's there available, obviously the process is still early, but it's a big time possibility, and I hope the Bills can consider it. Talking about Shakir. Shakir is the slot guy now. I feel like he earned the right to come into the camp as the uncontested number three guy or slot guy, right? And he's been developing so well. I hope he works out with Eric Moulds again, because if there is a Bill wide receiver that I really love, that guy is Emo. So I hope he can work with the big guy again and come back even more prepared for next season, because I felt like he earned this spot at the slot wide receiver. And man, he's getting there as a guy who might be able to win games for you if he starts to put out more of those plays just like his touchdown against the Steelers. I feel at the bare minimum, he is your slot guy you can win with at the slot position, Randy.
Yeah, no, I mean, I think Shakir, you know, last part of the season and through the playoffs, he definitely earned that slot role. I think you could definitely see us moving off of Deontay Hardy in the offseason, potentially, especially with Nyheim Hines coming back, in theory, as one of your primary kick returners. But, you know, which is also something that my guy Xavier Leggett offers, his kick return. You know, I definitely think that Hardy you could see go by the wayside, especially if there's a decent little cap savings there. Shakir has earned that spot. You bring in a little competition. You've got Andy Isabella signed to a futures deal. You've got KJ Hamler signed to a futures deal. There's plenty of guys that fit that mold in the draft that you can get on day three, late day three even, or as undrafted free agents. So I think we're okay there. I think we're in good shape there one way or the other, with Shakir leading the pack. I like it. As far as, you know, and then moving into tight ends too, I think you got one guy there that you can definitely win with, or sorry, that you can win because of, and then there's another guy that you can win with. And obviously we know who those are, Kincaid being the top end one and Knox being the guy that you can win with. They're both quality players. I think they bring different skills to the table, but they present different challenges for defenses when used correctly. So I think overall our skill group, as far as pass catchers, is in a good spot. We just need to tweak a few pieces here and there, and we'll have a very, very explosive top end in the NFL unit. I think what's important for Bills fans to realize is that whoever we do end up getting, as far as in the draft for that second wide receiver spot, is that they coming off, you know, to begin the season, they're not going to be, just because they're wide receiver two doesn't mean they're going to be target two. You got Diggs, mm-hmm. you got Kincaid, you've got Shakir, you've got James Cook in the running backs group. So this guy is going to be walking in as like a wide receiver or a pass catching target four or five a lot of times. He's not going to be a primary. So it's going to allow that person to kind of transition in. So patience is a virtue. And I would advise Bills Mafia to be patient with whoever that guy is, whether it's my guy or somebody else, whoever steps into that Gabe Davis role, have some patience. Okay, it will take a little time.
Totally agree, man. And about the tight ends as well, I feel like Kincaid is trending in the right direction, just like Shakir, and maybe with more potential to work with, right? And yeah, I feel better about this pass catching group than I felt about the group before the season. Right, I feel really better. I feel like we have some potential there. We're gonna add one more, and if this guy especially can add that contested catch ability outside, it would be already a great addition to this offense. Right, a new skill, a new wrinkle that we don't have right now. Moving on, so to the running backs, James Cook established as a guy. Establish himself as a guy that I also will. I feel like he's a guy that can win games for you, or at least very close to that, because with his speed, with his potential passing game, also maybe work on the jugs machine a little bit this offseason, right? But it's right there, man. And Josh is gaining confidence in him, and I feel like we have another guy that can win games for you at the running back position. And then other guys, Ty Johnson has been a surprise. He's a free agent, but that's a guy that I'd love to have back on the roster.
Yeah, I think Ty Johnson is a great low-cost solution to kind of an RB2, RB3. And I think what's important to understand is that the reason why we saw an evolution in James Cook and Ty Johnson is because of the offensive line. I think all five of those guys are not necessarily guys that you win because of, but they're all solidly in the win with group mm-hmm. because they worked so well together. Osiris Torrance was, you know, a wonderful, wonderful addition to the offensive line and really locked down that guard spot. But also Connor McGovern, you know, he did a really good job this year. And I remember, you know, reading when we signed him, there was a lot of Cowboys fans who were like, thanks, appreciate you taking our trash, good riddance to bad rubbish. Yeah. You know, and he turned out to be a really, really good player for us this year. Deion Dawkins had a spectacular year. You know, for the most part, I think he really solidified himself as a solid player and a top half in the league, left tackle. He's probably in line for a small extension, I would imagine, to try and get some money. So the offensive line and James Cook, as it relates to it, there was a lot of times as a rookie and when I saw the things of him coming out, is that I worried that he had the C.J. Spiller gene of, oh, my God, I can't see anything in front of me. Let me just dart to the sideline because I know I can beat the guy to the corner. And in college, that works. When you're at Georgia, when you're at Clemson, when you're, you know, in that scenario, it works. You're the fastest guy on the field. In the pros, that's not the way that it plays out. And C.J. Spiller had such a short career because he couldn't figure that out. James Cook figured that out this year, and it was a beautiful thing to see. When you see him kind of darting through and finding the creases, and then once he found the crease, just hitting the gas and go, being able to get that one cut and up and be able to get 6, 7, 8, 9, 10-plus yards and fighting through contact. It was a wonderful thing to see. And I was not a fan of the Cook pick coming out because I wanted Breece Hall. I thought he was a better overall player. But, man, James Cook really won me over this year in terms of the way that he ran the ball throughout the course of the season. He made huge strides. And if he can add the consistent pass catching to his game to complement this new running style that he showcased this year, he'll be a really good back for us for the next couple of years.
Yeah, man, 100%. And just to close it out about the offensive line, I feel like Dawkins, kind of like Oliver, played all season long, almost going to that group that can win games for you. But not that he had a bad game, but that only snap, man, that could have resulted in Josh Allen's touchdown, you know? Chris Jones just was able to throw him over Josh. That's where a left tackle that can win games for you, he holds down and he doesn't allow it to happen, right? So, and also about Torrence and Spencer Brown, especially Torrence, very excited for this kid's future because incredible, impressive what he did this rookie year. And Spencer Brown finally.
I do want to put a little caveat on the offensive line, though. They were really good this year. However, Josh Allen made them look a lot better than they actually are. Okay.
Absolutely.
There's that big 6'5" X factor back there made a huge difference as far as sacks surrendered and
especially sacks, right? Yeah.
Yeah, I mean,
when I feel like in the run game, how physical they were, that's what I really
love to see.
And I hope they can continue to get better there. And Spencer Brown has all the physical tools to work with. So excited to see his future now and next season, especially if he can continue to trend up in the right direction, right? All right, let's close it out. We have special teams and coaching staff. Right, and special teams real quick. The biggest question mark special teams, 100% in my opinion, Tyler Bass, bad season, great contract. So you, in the ideal world, he would be establishing himself even more this season as a top-tier kicker and a guy who could win games for you. But with his recent performance, that's a guy that, simply put, you need better than what he's offered recently, even though he might be the guy that can still become that win games for you. That's how I see him, Randy.
He's not going anywhere, but he's got to figure out what's wrong real fast. Put it that way.
Yeah.
He's got to fix
it. And Sam Martin. How about Sam Martin?
My thought on the punter is that they're a dime a dozen. They're replaceable. He did a good job, but if he can't do it, just find somebody else. Just make sure they're not going to get arrested or accused of some gang rape situation where they get taken off the team before they even have a chance to kick.
Yeah.
A punter is an important weapon to have, but it's very low on my priorities list. So if we keep Sam Martin, great. If we move on from him, okay. You know.
Man, you know what? Even with the way Bass has been kicking badly recently, I was kind of hopeful if Matt Heck maybe could bring back some of his magic with Heck being his holder, you know, if Martin couldn't go in this last game. And unfortunately, we couldn't see it because clearly Martin couldn't punt for in this game. But still, Ferguson is a no-go, and he won't win games for you because he's a long snapper. Simply put, he can lose games for you, right? A bad long snapper. But win games for you, a guy like this won't win games for you. In Naheem Hines getting back as a returner, Deonte Hardy had one big play entire season, right? I feel like you got to get better there. And maybe Naheem Hines can offer you a nice kick returner, but question mark coming back from the season-long injury.
Yeah. I mean, one of those two is going to end up being a squeeze because of money is what it comes down to. They both offer a lot of the same thing in the return game and then, you know, limited positional use. So one of them is going to get squeezed, possibly both. You know, you never know. I doubt it. Brandon Bean said there is a plan for Naheem Hines, so I would take his word on that and think that, you know, if anybody of the two of them, it's probably going to be Hardy out the door, one and done, and then replace him with a younger guy. So that's pretty much where it all lines up. I think that, you know, special teams is mostly solid, but there's room for improvement.
No doubt, no doubt. And then the coaching staff to close it out, Randy. I had Sean McDermott twice here because obviously he's the head coach and the defensive coordinator. And then Joe Brady because despite being the intern and despite having a coaching search, and I saw today that the Bills were interviewing the former Bills quarterback and current Cleveland QB coach. Great. I just forgot his name.
Ted Lewis.
Ted Lewis, yes. Stevie Johnson was crazy high on him when he was here in the leading the chart. I asked Stevie about which guy he played with that he thought could have been better in different circumstances, different opportunities. And he mentioned Ted Lewis as the first guy. It was surprising for me. And Ted Lewis is getting an interview. But
I think he was with Tampa this year, wasn't he? He was part of the Baker Mayfield resurgence with Dave Canales.
I heard something Cleveland. I read, I believe, but if it's Tampa, all good.
I'll double check.
But anyways, man, Bean was mentioning Brady in his interview as he is the offensive coordinator for the future, and I really doubt they want keep him, you know, with the way everybody's campaigning from him to continue. Renan here in the chat just brought in the information about Tampa. You're right, yeah. Randy. So I really doubt Brady is going anywhere. And it's been a short period, but I will start with Brady. And I like what I've seen from him.
There's so much hypothetical with Brady. There's a lot because, you know, people are going to say that, you know, we didn't even see Joe Brady's offense this year, that he was just kind of working with what Dorsey had put together, which, you know, I'm sure there's something to that. But I think it's important not only for, you know, the Bills and this regime, this coaching staff, and also for Josh Allen, that they needed to conduct a thorough, legitimate search and interview several candidates. They can't just do a couple token interviews to, you know, comply with the Rooney rule and then say, all right, it's Joe Brady's job. They can't afford to do that. Not right now, not in the situation that they're in. They need an honest search. And the same thing goes with defensive coordinator. You know, if Sean McDermott wants to keep the play caller duties, fine. But they need to really look at, you know, who is available out there, even if it's elevating somebody on the staff to keep them, like a Bobby Babbage, for example. You know, they have to be honest and look inward and say, you know, what can we do? It's all about getting a trophy. It's all about getting a ring. What can we do to put ourselves in the best position to do that? I don't have anything against Joe Brady as the offensive coordinator if that's the route they go. I think he did a good job the second half of the year, kind of cleaning up the things that, that Dorsey was doing. But overall, I think it's important that they conduct a thorough search. Smiley, you know, I'm sure I think there's better special teams coaches out there. So I'd be willing, I'd be perfectly okay if he's
need out better.
You know, need definitely better. Need better.
Yeah. And about Brady, I just feel like they won't do that. Or I don't know. I just feel like he's not losing this job. But the only way he loses his job is if they do what you're saying and do a true research to interview process, because that's the only way you can be blown out by somebody else, right? And I feel like they need to be blown out by somebody else to be able to move on from Brady. But I feel I'm really confident in Joe Brady, to be honest. I like his a lot of people didn't like his game plan against the Chiefs. I loved it. I feel like he established the run game as I was expecting early. I feel like we didn't have big plays, but they were there to be done, you know.
They were there to be made, and they were missed opportunities. But also, you know, we fell victim to the same, I hate using this term, but like the same old Bills thing where like we came out in the start of the second half in a game where you have to be up the whole game. You can't come out flat from a half, whether it's beginning of the game or in the second half. And we came out flat at the half and lost any sort of momentum that we may have had. And as an offensive coordinator, you can't allow that to happen. You have to put your team in the position to be able to start to heat up and to generate some first downs quickly and to get the ball moving. And I just didn't see it. And so, I like Joe Brady. I think he's the leader in the clubhouse. But there are questions to be answered, and I think it's only fair to do an honest search.
Yeah, no doubt. And that start of the second half was tough. I still feel like he had an answer for the adjustment from the Chiefs stopping the Bills' run game, and he started to hit on those quick screen passes, wide receiver screen passes. But, yeah, and I feel like the defense – allowing or conceding points every drive definitely didn't help, right? But
yeah,
I really like his job. I like I feel like it's important that Josh can trust the guy, and I don't know, man. I'm comfortable with Brady. I feel like you can win with him, right? Especially having and if you give him more options, more weapons, you can. He might be a guy that can win games for you with his scheming. We'll see. We need to wait and see, right? And Sean McDermott, to close it out, I feel like, man, I'd love to tell you that he wins games for you at the defensive coordinator spot, but he doesn't. Simply put, when the biggest it seems clear for me that he won't win games for you with his adjustments, with his game plan, with his way of conducting the defense. He might be at best a guy that you can win with, but if we're talking the big game so far, I feel like he's the main reason we can't get past those difficult teams, man. And because he has the weapons, yes, there were injuries and all, but he has enough to be able to win. And every time he finds a way. Because let's be honest, that fake punt, it would have lost the game before the big Jordan Poyer play, you know? If that's a touchdown, man, games is finished there. So I feel like you need better, and not necessarily you need to fire McDermott this offseason, but he gotta keep getting better, you know? I feel like he developed a little bit more this season. He adjusts a little bit more on situations that he used to struggle, but it hasn't been enough still. He's still got to get better than that, in my opinion.
Absolutely.
Okay. Randy, thank you so much, man, for taking your time joining me. I really appreciate every time you can join the show, and looking forward to doing some draft content with you, preparing some stuff, looking for the draft and free agency going forward. The doors are always wide open for you. Thank you, man.
Thank you, man. Appreciate you having me on as always. And yeah, we'll definitely get back up for some draft talk later on.
Awesome. Bills Mafia, I really appreciate you taking your time. Hit that like button, subscribe, listen, and download the podcast on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and your favorite aggregators. And that's it. I'll be back on Sunday with the Leading the Charge in Portuguese for Brazil and Latin America, and interacting via chat, answering questions, and talking Bills. So you are all invited. Next Friday, also Leading the Charge back in English for all the American fan base. So thank you so much, and see you around. Go Bills.
Go Bills.
Hey, this is Scott Galloway, author, professor, entrepreneur, and most importantly, host of the Prop G podcast. We got a special series running on right now called The Future of Work, where I answer all your questions on, surprise, the future of work. Questions including, what are we missing when we work remotely? Or how do we handle work-life balance when a major opportunity comes knocking? From the provocative to the technical, we're offering insights you won't want to miss. So tune in to The Future of Work, a Prop G Pod special sponsored by Canva. You can find it on the Prop G Pod wherever you get your podcasts.